the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. This is the place for Christian conversation, intelligent Christian conversation about the things that matter. And the thing we're going to talk about today, the issue today, really matters. I received an email subsequent to an article I published last week. Here is the email. I'm going to just read to you the question, the statement from this listener right away. This is what he says. Why do you insist on driving people away from organized religion? I am a 60-year-old Baptist chemist, science educator, Sunday school teacher, parent, and grandparent. I believe in evolution, the how of life, and I believe in God, the why of life, and see no conflict in these beliefs. I believe that God had a hand in the creation of the world and life in the world, and that science helps us understand more about these processes every day. When organized religion forces me to choose religion or science, I will no longer participate in organized religion. This is just one more reason that young adults are rejecting organized religion. Period. End quote. End of email. This is a challenge. It's a challenge I'm going to take up today, and we're going to take up today in this conversation. I want to hear from you, but I also want to make the point emphatically that this is the time for us to get the issue clearly in our minds. You choose between belief in God and belief in evolutionary theory. If you write something like this, either you don't understand evolution or you don't understand what it means to affirm that God created the earth, because there is nothing that is reconcilable between those two propositions. Now, in the background to this, we have other controversies we're going to discuss. This appears to be the right time to take this on. You just go back to May the 3rd. Earlier this month, the first Republican presidential debate held in California, the issue of evolution came up. Three Republican candidates for the nomination said that they did not believe in evolution, and the national press went into a frenzy as if they just said they don't believe in oxygen. Then, at the same time, they have to come back and do a story that says at least 75% of Americans don't believe in natural selection. So who is out of step here? Then, just a few days ago, a major museum, a museum to creationism, opened in the Cincinnati suburban area, and there were protesters outside, and again, the national news media went into an absolute frenzy. How is it that people could not believe in evolution? We're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program, and this is the place for you to call to join the conversation. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This issue does matter. When you talk about the basic and fundamental issues of a Christian worldview, nothing can be right if you get creation wrong. Because everything flows from how we are to understand this world around us and how we are to understand humanity. You take all the great issues of the day, and I can promise you, and on this program, we're going to start connecting some dots. All of these issues come back to this question. What does it mean to be human? Who made us? Or are we accidents? Big question. To your calls in just a few minutes. Again, the number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. While we are talking about controversies that matter, controversy over abortion really does matter. When you talk about the Christian worldview and understanding the dignity of human life, you realize that the issue of abortion is a front and central challenge to that understanding. The destruction of human life in the womb is a sign indeed that this is a culture that has accommodated itself to a denial of human dignity in the womb that inevitably leads to a denial of human dignity in the streets, in the hospital wards, in the nursing home, in the hospice, you name it. But there has appeared a new controversy, and this one somewhat out of the blue. A Colorado group known as Colorado Right to Life has bought a full-page ad in the Washington Times attacking Focus on the Family chairman and founder James Dobson, accusing him of misleading the public as Dr. Dobson celebrated the recent decision by the Supreme Court known as Gonzales v. Carhart that outlaws partial birth abortion. Actually, what the Supreme Court's decision did is to allow the acknowledge the constitutionality of a federal law that is already on the book, signed into law by President George W. Bush, outlawing this abhorrent procedure of partial birth abortion. But Colorado Right to Life bought this ad suggesting, and let me just read their words. He said, Dr. Dobson, you mislead Christians claiming this ruling will protect children. The court granted no authority to save the life of even a single child. It concluded by asking Dr. James Dobson to, quote, please repent, end quote. Now, just a bit of truth in advertising. I am on the board of Focus on the Family. I am not disconnected from this. And so I'm going to speak personally, but also as a matter of principle to this. When you have a group like this that says there can be no incremental steps towards the goal we want, you have a group that has designated itself dead on arrival in terms of cultural impact. And that's what's happening with this Colorado Right to Life group. Now, I want to tell you that gladly the National Right to Life organization, the parent organization, has repudiated the statement made by the Colorado chapter. But there's really something else going on here. And while we're talking about this, we need to realize that as intelligent Christians are engaging these issues, we have to keep the intelligence on. Because there are subtleties in these arguments that are very important. What should our goal be? If we really understand that every single human being is made in the image of God, and the human life bears that dignity, and thus is to be regarded as sacred from the moment of conception, and that means fertilization, until natural death, then we understand that abortion can never be tolerated, can never be accepted, can never be simply in a compromise position allowed as an option as our goal. Our goal as Christians must be to see the protection of every single human being born and preborn, born and unborn. That being said, how are we going to get there? In 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the Roe v. Wade decision that basically made elective abortion, or what is known more popularly as abortion on demand, legal in all 50 states, denied the right of the states to preclude a woman or even to put up significant barriers to a woman in obtaining legal abortion. Now, a lot of the subtleties of the Roe v. Wade decision are still up for debate and all the rest, but the bottom line is that the cultural and legal impact of that decision was to make abortion basically legal and available almost any under any circumstance, at least legally speaking, in all 50 states. That has led to an abortion rate of over a million abortions a year and a death toll since 1973 of well over 40 million unborn children killed in the womb. Now, those who place this ad have as their ultimate goal the elimination of legal abortion. Dr. James Dobson has as his goal, at least as a goal, the elimination of legal abortion. But what you have in this disagreement is you have a group that says we can't do anything, we can't celebrate anything, we can't actually acknowledge even the progress made on any front until Roe v. Wade is completely overruled, and until every single state adopts legislation or the national government adopts legislation that criminalizes abortion. Well, folks, that's not the way change happens. That's just not the way it's going to happen. And this is just another reminder to us that we have to keep our brains engaged in this process. And so I am speaking up on behalf of Dr. James Dobson, whose position on this is absolutely right. It's the position that I share with him. And that is that the Supreme Court's decision, especially the majority opinion written by Anthony Kennedy, is one of the most welcome developments in a long time, especially since Justice Kennedy is one of the ones who wrote the atrocious. In fact, he was the lead author of the atrocious decision in the decision of the case known as the Bray decision that basically affirmed Roe v. Wade. This language, adopted by a majority on the U.S. Supreme Court in the decision handed down just several weeks ago, is the first indication that at the level of the United States Supreme Court, reflecting, I think, a general and growing consensus among the American people, is that there's a problem with abortion that has to be confronted. There are some limits that have to be acknowledged even now. And because of that, we should celebrate that as a victory, not that we rest on the laurels or are satisfied with where we stand today, but that we understand that changing minds and changing hearts is a progressive process. And it doesn't help to have this kind of internecine warfare among Christian conservatives, much less those who claim to be for the cause of life. Well, when you think about the issues of the day, you realize that there are many, and as all of these fronts come together, you understand that they are tied to even the main issue we're going to be talking about today, which is the dignity of humanity in terms of the understanding of the conflict between evolution and creation. How does that tie to everything else? Well, consider the fact that in New Hampshire, civil unions are now the law. They will be legal starting in January under a bill signed into law Thursday by Governor John Lynch. According to the New York Times, the ceremony in the governor's chambers, the New Hampshire State House, Mr. Lynch said, I do not believe this bill threatens marriage. I believe that this is a matter of conscience and fairness, end quote. Well, that's the kind of political speak you and I have both grown to expect. But it goes back to the question is whether we as human beings negotiate and create our own identity, our own meaning, or whether that is assigned to us by our Creator. And that goes back to the big issue of whether or not there is a Creator. With a Creator, we are people defined by the one who made us. If there is no Creator, then we can make it up as we go along, and we are living in a society that right now is up to that experiment. Folks, we face a choice between creation and evolutionary science. What we're going to do today is talk about the lie of the idea of middle ground in theistic evolution, and we'll do that when we come right back. Welcome back, folks. There is a lot in the background to our conversation today. On May 3rd, that was the first Republican presidential debate held at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California. Interesting stuff. What do they talk about? Well, a host of issues, but one of the issues, out of the blue, evolution. Why were they talking about it? Well, it appeared that at least some of the people who were asking questions of the candidates had the issue of evolution on the mind. They ask for a show of hands. And the question was, how many of you don't believe in evolution? Three held up their hands. Tom Tancredo, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and Senator Sam Brownback. And you would have thought in the national media that they just said that they don't believe in oxygen or hydrogen. It's an amazing thing when you start looking at the response that came immediately from the media. And as I was tracking that, I thought, well, you know, that's probably a good issue for us to discuss. Then comes the dedication of the Creation Museum in Petersburg, Kentucky. That's suburban Cincinnati. And again, you just look at a flurry of the news articles. Some of the ones I hold in my hand right now are just amazing. The Washington Post. Listen to this. It begins, Peter Slevin wrote the article. At the Creation Museum, a fanciful Eden rises from the void. Adam appears bearded and handsome, if slightly waxen. Eve emerges from his rib with luxuriant hair and a kindly expression. Trees blossom and creatures frolic. Evidence that it all started well in God's perfect world. Now, that's the intro to the story, and you can tell that's tongue-in-cheek and sarcastic from the beginning. And then they come back and they say, listen to this, but in its latest demonization, that's the word they use, demonization of Darwinian evolution, there's a sticking point. For the biblical account to be accurate and the world to be so young, several hundred years of research in geology, physics, biology, paleontology, and astronomy, we need to be very, very wrong. Now, you put those two paragraphs together, what do you got? You got the Washington Post saying, well, it's impossible that several hundred years of research in geology, physics, biology, paleontology, and astronomy could be very, very wrong. Therefore, the people who are doing this museum in Petersburg, Kentucky have to be, well, very, very wrong. At least they understand you can't have it both ways. There are some who want to have it both ways. Then I got this email, and last week I published an article at albertmuller.com having to do with this argument that children are hardwired for teleology. It's an important article, and as a matter of fact, it was published just Tuesday of this week, May the 29th. In which two psychologists from Yale University argued that the minds of children are hardwired to see design, and that's why Americans are so resistant to the theory of evolution. And if you're listening to the program last week, you'll remember that I quoted these two psychologists saying that, for instance, children, when they see the objects of nature, assume that something must have created them. When they see clouds and lions, they think God must have made them for a purpose. And, of course, they come back and say, but there was no God. There, at least they say there was no purpose. There is no creator, so that's irrelevant. And children are wrong, but they don't know they're wrong. In other words, what they're suggesting is that the 74% of Americans, according to a recent poll, who deny the theory of natural selection need to grow up and be like the scientist, understanding that there's no purpose behind the lion and there is no creative intelligence behind the cloud. Then I get this email. Here it is. Why do you insist on driving people away from organized religion? I am a 60-year-old Baptist, chemist, science educator, Sunday school teacher, parent, and grandparent. I believe in evolution, the how of life, and I believe in God, the why of life, and see no conflict in these beliefs. I understand that God had a hand in the creation of the world and life in the world, and that science helps us understand more about those processes every day. When organized religion forces me to choose religion or science, I will no longer participate in organized religion. This is just one more reason that young adults are rejecting organized religion. Okay, folks, I said this is worth talking about because this is an argument you and your children are certain to hear. This is the kind of argument that is being pressed upon them by some, even within Christian organizations and teaching at so-called Christian schools, and you'll hear speakers suggesting you can have it both ways. You can believe in evolution and creation. Here's the bottom line. You can't. Not if you understand evolution and if you understand what it means for God to be creator. When this man writes, he's a 60-year-old Baptist chemist, science educator, and Sunday school teacher, parent and grandparent. Then he says he believes in evolution and in God. Evolution is the how. God is the why. He says he knows, sees no conflict in these beliefs. So it's because evidently he doesn't understand one or the other or both. The dominant theory of evolution, if you get anything I say today, please get this clearly. The dominant theory of evolution, known most specifically as the theory of natural selection. That is the very heart of Darwinian evolution. That's the very heart of the theory of evolution taught in America's college campuses. That's the very heart of the theory of evolution so cherished by the scientific establishment. The very heart of it, natural selection, says there was no outside influence in the beginning, in the middle, or in the end, period. That is why natural selection matters. The first word natural means not supernatural. Let's just get that clear. You can't then come back and say, I believe that God used evolution in order to create the world as he wanted it. Because then you're bringing God in, either at the beginning, or at the middle, or at the end, where the dominant theory of evolution says he can't be present. The minute you bring in God, you don't have natural selection anymore. Now, by the way, the scientific establishment fully understands this. They understand it ideologically. That's why when your kids go off to college and they're confronted by this, they come back and they understand it. But there are some, and this is what really frustrates me, like the man who wrote this letter, who, I'm going to say this just as strong as I can, lack the intellectual credibility and the intellectual honesty to admit you can have one or the other, you can't have both. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALL. By the way, two other things about this email that are very instructive. That's why I appreciate it. And I do appreciate all who write me. I appreciate the man who wrote this. I won't use his name. This isn't personal. I don't know him. But when he says he believes in God as the why of life, he comes back in the next sentence and says, I believe that God had a hand in the creation of the world. Well, isn't it reassuring to know that God had a hand in it? Where was his hand? To what extent? Well, again, the scientific establishment, and this man claims to be a science educator, is going to come right back and say, no, you don't. You don't believe in evolution if you believe God had anything to do with it. But as a Christian, I want to know, just what do you think God did? Was God doing the best he could? Was God basically just trying to organize the system a little bit? Was God just trying to influence the system a little bit? Had a hand in evolution. Let me ask you to read the Bible and come up with a theory that God had a hand in the creation of the world. And then when he says, when organized religion forces me to choose religion or science, I'll no longer participate in organized religion. Well, then we find out what his religion is. You know, we just have here an affirmation of idolatry. If I have to choose between the Bible and the scientific establishment, I'm going with the scientific establishment. And he says organized religion, but what he means here is the organized affirmation of biblical truth. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We've got callers from over the country lining up. I knew this would be a hot topic. Let me tell you that we're not specifically taking on all kinds of topics related to evolution from the age of the earth and other things. Those are all related issues, but we're dealing specifically with the lack of common ground between creation and evolution. And I want to get right out on the floor for our conversation today, the fact that you have to choose between one and the other. When we come back, I'm going to have as my special guest here in the studio, Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology here at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He was present in Prestonburg, Kentucky, at the opening, the grand opening and dedication of the Creation Museum. We're going to be talking about what that means, and we're going to talk about what he and his boys found when they got there. It turns out it wasn't just the museum they encountered, but protesters outside. Dr. Moore has written about this at his website at the Henry Institute. We'll be talking about his article and what he thinks all this means in just a moment. And we're going to take your calls. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The talk today is on whether you can cut the difference between belief in God and belief in evolutionary theory. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. As I said at the beginning of the program, I don't think there is a more fundamental question when we're considering the great issues of our day and the meaning of human life than the question of whether there is a creator. Now, let me tell you what I want us to talk about, and so we can focus your interest in calling the program. It's in this. Can you make a case for theistic evolution? Can you make a case for some combination of evolutionary theory and the doctrine of the Bible clearly taught that God created the world? That's what we're going to be talking about. Now, you've already heard my verdict on this. The answer is no, but I'll be glad to have someone call and make it a try. But I want you to know, you're not going to have an easy time of it. You better be ready with a cogent argument. If you got one, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Bristol, Tennessee, where Kermit's on the line, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Kermit.
Thank you for taking my call. If you cut down a fern or a plant of any kind, how long does it take for it to wither away to nothing?
Well, I don't have hours for you, Kermit, but not long. Where are you headed?
If you flood an area and it remains and it turns into a fossil, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I need you to make the point, Kermit.
The point is, if you cut down a plant, it will evaporate and wither away in a matter of days. If it's a fossilized remain with all of the veins and all of the outline of the original plant leaves and stuff, it had to happen in a very quick order of time.
And you're suggesting perhaps the flood?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good point, and I appreciate that. It also goes back to the fact that I'm often asked about how there could be such apparent signs of age. And frankly, there are two good explanations of that from Scripture. One of them has to do with the actual traumatic process of creation itself. When you read Genesis 1 and come to understand what kind of forces of energy would be required to do all that's described there, from the creation of the firmament, the separation of the waters from the firmament, the separation of the firmament and the lands in terms of the continental structure and all the rest, then the creation of all the topography, you're talking about something that would have required incredible energy and could have produced a good many of those signs we call of age. And of course, the flood itself, just in terms of fluid hydraulics and all the rest, could have done that. I'm not a scientist, but I do know this. Go into a forest after a forest fire and start looking at the apparent age that immediately results on the bed of that forest floor, and you're talking there about a very small example of things that can happen. Dr. Russell Moore is Dean of the School of Theology at Southern Seminary, and he was at the dedication and opening of the Creation Museum in suburban Cincinnati. Dr. Moore, what'd you find there?
Well, for one thing, we found an excellent museum. It really is well done, giving biblical arguments for creation, but also giving Darwinist arguments, so that you will have fossils, for instance, with two sets of explanations, one that is a biblical creationist understanding and the other that's the more typical Darwinist explanation that you might find in a secular museum. But we also found on the outside protesters who are arguing against this museum even being there.
Now, this blows my mind a little bit. I just have to ask you bluntly, what kind of person protests a creation museum?
I don't know. I would think I could understand it if it were a publicly funded museum. It's not. It's completely privately funded.
$28 million.
$28 million. But you had people who are protesting it with groups with names such as Free Inquiry. Imagine the irony of that, saying, we don't want you to come into this museum. Now, I can see them saying this is scientifically incredible, we don't believe it. They have the right to make that argument. But to say you shouldn't have a museum that even has this viewpoint, well, that's something else entirely.
The Washington Post said that the museum represents a demonization of Darwinism. Is that what we saw there?
Not at all. It said this is the Darwinist account of all of this phenomena, and this is what we believe is a creationist account. There even were times in which the museum would say, we understand this is a problem for us in explaining how this fits scientifically with the biblical data, and here are some options. But there was not any kind of scientific dogmatism, just this is our authority in the biblical
text. Of course,
this
is a paper that has also had at least one reporter that referred to evangelicals as poor, uneducated, and easily
led. Easy to command, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, we know where we stand. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. you know you're touching something important. We've hit a live nerve in this culture. When you have people who will charter buses to protest the opening of a creationism museum, I mean, they're going to take time out of their day. I'll be honest, I've never protested against anything in my life. I've never stood out on a sidewalk with a sign in my hand. To think of doing that, the opening of a, frankly, a museum of Darwinism, is something beyond my motivation. What in the world would motivate people to do it against a museum dedicated to creation? I'll tell you what'll do it. The shaking of the foundations, that's what's doing it. The realization of the evolutionary scientists that a vast majority of Americans aren't buying their theory. You're hearing panic in the high church of Darwinism. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Continuing our discussion, and the discussion really prompted by several developments in the culture and in the news, but also by just this one email I shared, which is indicative of some others I got, and it's very frustrating. I'll admit, when I hear people say you don't have to choose between evolution and belief in God's creation of the universe, and to come back and say, well, you either don't believe in evolution as the evolutionists believe in it, or you don't believe in the divine creation of the world as the scripture teaches it. You can't reconcile the two. Let's go to Ian calling from Asheville, North Carolina. Go ahead, Ian.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to say that I used to believe in evolution, and it took a lot more faith and effort for me to believe in evolution than it does to believe in creation once you believe in creation.
Okay. Spell that out just a little bit for me. And number one, I agree with you, of course, but what was your difficulty as an evolutionist? When you were an evolutionist, what was it you were having to hold on to by faith?
Well, I was having the whole entire fossil record. I went to school and studied anthropology, and mostly just because of this argument itself. And so I was interested in the evolution of mankind and its entire culture, and then how was that backed up in the fossil record? And it required quite a few leaps of faith to believe evolution.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting point, Ian. When I think about the Creationism Museum that just opened up, and Dr. Moore was just talking about what's there in the exhibit, you can go to the press stories and see that, you can go to the website for the museum and see that. I was thinking about how you would come up with a parallel institution. I mean, I guess you have it kind of in the National Museum of Natural Science and certainly in the New York Museum of Natural Science. But you start looking at things like you realize that you do have to have huge gaps in the story, because you just don't have actual evidence to look at it. All right, thanks for your call, Lee. And let's go to Tim, calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, Dr. Moeller, thanks for having me on, and I thank the Lord for your work. But I wanted to make a point about a big conflict between Christianity and evolution, and this is a position supported by the Institute for Creation Research. I read about it on their website. And this is that evolution requires death before the sin of Adam. There was the death of millions of animals before the sin of Adam. If that is the case, then death is not the penalty for sin. And if death is not the penalty for sin, then Christ's cross did not atone for sin. So, therefore, evolution and Christianity cannot be reconciled.
Tim, you're caught thinking like a Christian, and I really appreciate that. That's drawing the lines, connecting the dots, and you're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, the theory of natural selection, the very heart of the understanding of Darwinian theory, is that it is the death and then the extinction of life forms that did not successfully adapt that explains why those that did survive became the predecessors of what we know now. And you're exactly right. That is completely incompatible with texts going from Genesis 1 and 2 to Romans 5 and on. It's incompatible with the whole picture of the Bible. Let's go to Merritt, calling from Lewistown, Montana. Listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Merritt.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's kind of similar to the last caller's argument, but I don't believe you can have evolution and a literal atom. I remember doing a Bible study with a liberal pastor one time, and he believed in evolution. And then on occasion, he'd refer to Adam, and I'd say, well, wait a minute. You mean you believe in a real Adam? And he's like, oh, yeah. And I said, well, if man evolved from apes or ape ancestors or whatever, I said, well, where did Adam come from? Did they evolve suddenly and then God at one point decided, oh, well, this is a man now and I'm going to make him accountable? And you know what, then did he sin, or wasn't there really a garden? Was there really an Eve? And if Adam never really existed, then where did we get our sin from? Are we really sinners? And if we're not really sinners, then why did Christ have to die? And the whole atonement thing just falls apart. So I don't see how you can even believe in any of that stuff and still accept any of the basics of Christianity.
Merritt, another very eloquent call, and your point is exactly right. And let me play that out just a little bit. Let's just think about the points, and in fact, that both Tim and Merritt made for a moment. The grand story of the Bible is a story of creation, fall, redemption, and consummation. It's the story of God glorifying himself, first by creating this universe, this cosmos as we know it, and within that creation, creating human beings as the conscious climax, apex of that creation, the only being made in his image, the only being able to know him, to be related to him, to worship him, of course, also the only creature able to both obey and disobey him consciously. But the doctrine of creation stands at the very beginning. Without that, you don't have anything else that matters that follows. If the world is simply a naturalistic accident, then there is nothing to Christianity, there's nothing to anything else, and religion's nothing more than a man-made artifact to create meaning in an otherwise meaningless world. It's just a made-up meaning. But the fall is the other thing. You have to explain why sin entered human experience. You have to explain why the earth is in the condition it now is. The scripture describes it in Romans chapter 8 as creation yearning for the appearing of the sons of men. Genesis 3 tells us that there were planetary, cosmic, universal consequences of Adam and Eve's sin. But again, if you don't have Adam and Eve, just as our last two callers are making the point, you don't have the story. You've got no starting point. You've got no basis. And furthermore, if we're not all literally the descendants of Adam and Eve, then there's no explanation of how Adam's sin was imputed to us. And without that, you have no need for the imputation of Christ's righteousness. You have no explanation of the cross. You have no need for this. And of course, the whole thing, at the most fundamental level, doesn't make sense. God can't be the Redeemer if he wasn't the Creator. Charles Hodge, very, very important Princeton theologian back in the last century, the 19th century, he made the point saying that God, as the Creator, is totally responsible for his creation. If God is not the Creator, then he is not responsible at all for the creation. And you have to choose between those two alternatives. And Charles Hodge is one of those people, sometimes people claim as being a theistic evolutionist. But he's also one of those people that saw clearly, even as Darwinism was early taking shape as a controversy, that in the end, God is the only explanation of everything that happens. And of course, nowadays, the evolutionary theory is clear that natural selection is at the very core. Without natural selection, you have no evolution. You just have people that want to call their theory evolution. In Louisville, Kentucky, Kent's on the line. Go ahead, Kent.
Yeah, I just want to say that it comes down to the popular theory is for evolution is, you know, chance. A lot of scientists say, here we are again and again, you know, coming back to chance. It's billions and billions and billions of possibilities down to one, the chance that you would have man created, the chance. Now, I know many scientists, and the scientists are Christians and are believers and don't look at it from that aspect because couldn't be doing that.
Good, another good point, Kent. And, of course, that draws our attention again to the fact that every important issue is related to systematic theology at every single point. And one of the points you're raising is the point of God's providence, the doctrine of providence. If the world is simply operating on its own, and if the main operation of the world is something you're going to define as chance and contingency, if God's not sovereign over every atom and molecule of the universe, he's not the God of the Bible. That's just the bottom line. Back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. Sometimes an argument from the other side is really helpful, and from the scientific establishment, let me just take one example. Daniel Dennett, Tufts University, one of the most influential evolutionary theorists of the day, very much a part of the evolutionary establishment. In his book on Darwin's Dangerous Idea, he refers to Darwinism, the theory of natural selection, as what he calls a universal acid. It, as he understood, rightfully corrodes every other belief. It becomes the only belief that matters. He takes this back to Sunday school. And he says he was taught in Sunday school a little rhyme about creation in which it affirmed that God created all the things for us and for his own glory. And he came back and he said, that's fine for Sunday school, but that's not real life. We now know that there was no designer, there is no design. You have to choose between Sunday school and modern science. That's why I wrote the article I did on Tuesday. Once again, the same argument coming from these two Yale psychologists. You have to choose between Sunday school and the scientific establishment. There's no middle ground. We'll be talking about this more, I'm sure, in days to come, because the scientific establishment is pushing this issue, and, of course, it is so fundamental to both worldviews, to the Christian worldview and to the secular worldview, the secular worldview with its precious first principle of Darwinism, and the Christian worldview with its essential tenet of divine creation. And the scientific establishment is so frustrated that the American public's just not going along with the theory. Congratulations to Evan O'Dorney of Danville, California, who won the Scripps National Spelling Bee. He spelled the word seraphine, that's S-E-R-R-E-F-I-N-E, for those not so adept as Evan at spelling. The 13-year-old boy received several prizes, a trophy, in a competition that he confessed, according to the Associated Press, really wasn't his favorite anyway. By the way, the seraphine, that word refers to a small set of forceps. He triumphed after a tense duel with Nate Gartke of Spruce Grove, Alberta, who was trying to become the first Canadian to win. The LA Times had a fascinating article on this, an article by Joanna Newman, arguing that the spelling bee is important, even as some people make fun of it, because it allows academic children their moment in the sun. Paige Kimball, the bee's director, said children want to be recognized. He won the contest in 1981 spelling the word sarcophagus. He said, all too often, children who prefer academics to athletics take a back seat. You'll be surprised, I think, to know that some teachers criticize the competition because they say that rote memorization and an emphasis on standardized testing and achievement and all of this has distorted the learning process. Yeah, these are the same people that want your children to learn all kinds of things rather than how to read. Hats off to Evan. Hats off to all the contributors and the competitors at the Scripps National Spelling Bee. And let's count this one a big win for the academic kids. Their day in the sun. We'll be back for Intelligent Christian Conversation next week, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.